Hey everybody, John Fusco here. I know you were expecting another fine episode of Indie Film Weekly today, but guess what? We're on vacation. So instead, we have a special treat for you. A few weeks ago, I got a chance to sit down with Justin Kurzel, director of the new Assassin's Creed movie, which is of course based on the incredibly popular game series. This is certainly a higher profile interview than I'm used to getting, but like many other recent blockbuster directors, Mr. Kurzel is a low budget filmmaker at heart. At a $130 million budget, Assassin's Creed was a far jump from the $15 million Macbeth, which in itself was a leap from the $2 million he spent on his first feature, The Snowtown Murders. We discussed the biggest challenges not only associated with making the jump from independent film to blockbuster, but also of being on a set where the scale is massive and there are endless voices in your ear throughout production. In the end, he insists what's most important is keeping your vision strong throughout all the voices, and in doing that himself, he hopes to have broken the dreaded video game curse. So let's just get right into it. Obviously, this is a big jump from Macbeth was your last film, right? It was great to see that sort of adaptation, and this is a entirely different beast as sort of adaptations are concerned. But I think that the biggest leap would have to be from doing, it was sort of an indie production, Macbeth.
Snowtown or Macbeth?
No, Macbeth. Yeah, Macbeth.
I mean, it was like, I think it was about 15 million and it was an independent film. This has been a massive leap.
So like comparatively, I don't know if you're allowed to discuss the budget of Assassin's Creed at all, but
no,
what
I think
would
Assassin's
that?
Is about 130.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's a big leap.
Yeah. So then,
I mean, Macbeth was like, you know, 31, 32 day shoot.
Right.
And Assassin's was like 92, 93.
And so you just told me that you just finished shooting 4 weeks
no,
ago?
No, I finished editing. I finished post about 4 weeks ago. So, you know, it's been, I mean, Assassin's has been like 2 years.
Yeah.
Macbeth was about just over a year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know, I didn't really expect it to be so all consuming. I guess I had these preconceived ideas about films like this and kind of how you did them. And I don't know. It felt like making my first film. It was just as you had the same sort of struggles in terms of schedule and money and time and ideas, and you know, it was not hugely different.
So it's just sort of a matter of scale, would you say? As far
it's
as
scale, like, and it's dealing with all the many kind of voices that you've kind of got that are all investments. You know, Ubisoft who invented the game, and we're also one of the movie producers. You've also got kind of Michael, who was a producer, Fassbender, you know, his company DMC, who had a huge input into the development of it. And then you've got New Regency, who are kind of making it. So you've got, you know, you've got three very distinct parties that have a very strong voice about it. And then you've got the expectation of kind of what is it? Are you making it for gamers? Are you making a film to branch out from those that are just familiar with the game and into a kind of new audience? And then you've got really complex ideas within the game that you're trying to, you know, you're struggling to kind of get down to a kind of singular idea. So that, I think that was the toughest. I think the actual production side of it, you know, it was just a lot of hard work, and I hadn't done action sequences like that before. So I was learning a lot on the run, but fortunately I had Adam Arkapor, my DOP, who I trust enormously, who really took a huge slice of that away from me and really kind of drove that. But it was just a story, you know, how to kind of take high concept ideas and, you know, place them within a kind of origin character story and then just sort of land them within this sort of genre.
Right. And there's been, I think, 4 Assassin's Creed games now. So you have a lot of material to work with. And then like a video game in general, it's just an entirely different experience than a film.
Yeah.
I mean, for one thing, it's 30 plus hours of gameplay. It's like a much more immersive experience. So I guess that's where the whole video game curse concept comes into play, just because it's such a difficult thing to adapt.
Yeah.
But before we unpack that, I'd kind of like to, all of the big challenges you said you had were actually like things that I specifically pointed out as questions. And I guess the first one would be to talk about how you deal with all of those visions coming into play. or vision, not visions, but how do you deal with all of those voices heard while trying to maintain your own vision in that, right? And sort of like, I guess making compromises that you'd have to make as a director in a larger scale film versus your independent film experience?
Well, you try to, I think the most important thing is you try to listen. You try to listen to what people are concerned about. I think as soon as you feel people are concerned about it not being something else, then I think you kind of stop listening. I think it's really about, look, what are the most important things that you kind of, that you're trying to tell within the story? You need to be really open and have a very strong debate about that. And then I think there's a time where all the kind of noise stops and you actually have to commit, you know, and follow your instincts on something. And that can be tricky because you don't quite know whether you're right. But I think strong vision in the end is always better over whether the choices are right or wrong. Because I think that things will be, you know, you'll find a way and at least the film or the story will feel a kind of sure-footed. But it was tough with this one because there were a lot of aspects to it that weren't quite working, that we were desperately trying to kind of find answers to. It took us a long time. It took me a long time to sort of realize that that it was an origin story, you know, that ultimately at the end of the day it was a man who, you know, was a lone wolf who kind of you know has been kind of been brought up without a family and is kind of very singular and sort of self-interested, and sort of discovers through the film that he's actually sort of part of a lineage and an ancestry that kind of goes back 500 years, and the way he learns about that is through his blood. You know, and I thought that once we kind of cooked onto that idea, and sometimes it's staring you in the face, but for some reason it just took me a long time to kind of find it. Mm-hmm. Then you put everything behind it, you know, and try to kind of have that as sort of fuel to sort of fight your fights.
Exactly. I mean, it's like origin story, whatever. Eventually, you're just like boiling it down to that central concept that's just been in stories forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How did you keep this sort of like an intimate or personal project in that sense where, you know, it is a huge movie? How did you go about directing it as if it was something of your own that you could really let your vision shine through?
I had some really good people around me. I didn't trust much at the beginning. I kind of, you know, you hear all the awful stories about, you know, control being taken away from a director, especially on films this large, and it being sort of directed by committee and so forth. So I went in feeling very nervous and skeptical and not really trusting that this was going to be a kind of process that was coming from me, you know. And then I started to kind of realize, I think just by the nature of working with New Regency and, you know, I think Arnaud Milchan is, you know, an incredibly director-driven producer, and the company, you know, has created some pretty extraordinary kind of work that is being, you know, created by auteurs. So, you know, I was really encouraged that New Regency were really, I guess, wanting me to kind of be very strong about my vision and you know, we're trying to keep that voice as singular as possible. And then Ubisoft, I think, were just trusting. They were kind of like, you know, you've got to find the film in this. It's got to have your sort of stamp on it. And, you know, we're engaged. Like when you're actually sort of talking about your approach and the fact that you want to try to do all this for real and you're really trying to concentrate on this sort of singular story, they really started to sort of get behind it. But, you know, it took a long time. And a lot of it was Michael as well. You know, he was a producer on the film, and it was about like how he wanted the character to evolve. You know, and that was a different collaboration that I'd had with him on Macbeth.
Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit. How did this relationship between you and Michael start? Marion also was in Macbeth. Was this sort of like grandfathered in from Macbeth, this whole project, or was it?
It kind of was a little bit, yeah. It was, I mean, Michael and I met after my first film. It was playing at the London Film Festival, Snowtown, and Shame was playing at the same time as well. And obviously I was a huge fan of Michael's work, especially in Hunger and Shame. I was really, you know, interested in meeting him in London. And fortunately, he'd seen Snowtown, and there was something about that film that he, you know, kind of connected to and wanted to meet. And then we just got together and we had a great time and great night. And I knew that he was someone that I desperately would love to work with in the future. And then Macbeth just came along, and that was a kind of weird organic experience of a whole lot of kind of similar minds coming together and thinking the same thing. And while we were making Macbeth, there was an intimacy that we all had, Marion, Michael and I, about the approach. You know, we were trying to do the verse in a very different way. We were outside most of the time. It was very, very trying conditions. And I think that when you feel as though there's a battle and you're doing it with your actors, a trust comes out of that and an intimacy that then sort of started to sort of, transform into, especially towards the end of Macbeth, the idea and the notion of doing Assassin's Creed, which, you know, I think we were quite intrigued by how to take this intimate experience into a larger, big budget film. So that's kind of how that started a little.
With the expectations of the fans in mind, is that something, expectation is just such a terrible thing to work with. It's why a lot of people, say that comedy is so hard, is because like people go into a movie theater expecting to laugh.
Yeah.
In your case, you have crazy diehard nerds or fans. I'm one of them, of the game.
Yeah.
Who obviously have their own preconceptions of the game and how the movie should be. Do you look to fulfill these expectations, or do you look to maybe find ways in which you can subvert these expectations?
I didn't play the game.
Right.
So, you know, and I didn't, I mean, even with Shakespeare, I wasn't a huge fan of Shakespeare. I designed Shakespeare a lot, and I'd spent a lot of time in the theatre. So you're aware of the baggage, you know, you're aware of the baggage and you kind of can see it. With this, I was actually quite excited by the fact that, you know, I was sort of being involved in something that was really loved. And I knew too that the fans of the game were going to be incredibly opinionated and pretty kind of brutal. And I'm aware of that. And there are some that are going to love, you know, really get into it, and there are others that are going to hate it. I think that's just the nature of the beast. But I think what was very important was to treat the fans with respect in regards to, well, look, we were naturally celebrating these aspects of the games that, you know, which is why you love it. But to also kind of not, for it not to be the film to be an appropriation of the game. You know, as soon as it sort of felt as though we were just sort of regurgitating certain aspects of the games or characters or kind of the look and the feel, then I thought, well, what justice is that doing to it? You know, it was my obligation to kind of, you know, put everything into this, treat it as much as I'd treated my other films, and find a unique cinematic world to it that, of course, is inspired by the game, but that could exist alone, you know, as a film, which is why we approached a lot of stuff in regards to trying to work out how to do a lot of it for real, you know, how to do a lot of the stunts and the parkour and stuff, you know, for real, in camera, on location. That really intrigued me. But the ideas in the game are just fantastic.
Yeah.
And genetic memory and the ideologies that the Templars and Assassins followed of free will and control. And, you know, this crazy line, you know, nothing is true, everything is permitted, that Assassins kind of speak of. I mean, that's insane to kind of like, you know, forget everything, you know, to not be influenced by religion or politics or anything around you, even consumerism, to sort of stop and start to think for oneself, to find your own self-realization. I mean, today's day and age, I think that's a rarity. So, you know, that was very, very important.
One idea that struck me while watching the movie, and it has to do with expectations. Are you making the movie with the idea of wanting the game crowd to come in and be satisfied by the movie, or would you rather have an audience leave and be inspired to play the game?
I think I always looked on just making a good film.
Right.
And I think getting people really engaged and involved in the world. I don't think I'm sort of making the film to get people to play Assassin's Creed that haven't played it before. I want people to be intrigued by it.
That's I think what I was going for, because I haven't really played the game either, but it was the world that you created that sort of brought me into it. So I was wondering.
I mean, I wanted people to be surprised about as much as I was, that what's behind this game. You know, that I think it's very easy to be a snob about. I mean, God, I was.
Yeah.
You know, when Michael kind of said to me, you know, I'm kind of developing a video game, I was like, why? You know, I was kind of like, you know, and it intrigued me about it because, you know, most people around me were kind of, you know, I guess I've made these kind of more independent auteur films and I were kind of going, why are you doing Assassin's Creed? And I felt it made me want to do it even more because I suddenly was woken up to the gaming community and it's incredibly sophisticated. It's the games are you know, are kind of like little pieces of art. I mean, Assassin's Creed, the amount of work that goes into recreating every one of those games, but then the thought that goes behind the ideologies of free will and control of the Templars and the Assassins, and just the notion of genetic memory. I mean, we were talking about it before, you know, the idea that you can have some sort of connection with your past, that somehow you can consciously touch what your ancestors have experienced, that somehow that leads into some answers as to intuition and instinct that you have, that skills that you pick up that are just naturally there. Mm-hmm. They all come from something that has happened, you know, behind you.
Yeah.
You know, that and that your own experiences in life, your blood, what you leave to your children, you have to take responsibility for. You know, that if you're, you know, if you lead a life that is full of guilt, that guilt will be passed on to your children.
Right.
You know, and that kind of notion and idea that there is a legacy, I think is a very powerful one that the game really celebrates. Now, if anyone pitched that in a room to make a film, everyone would sign straight away.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so I was kind of really amazed and surprised, not only the evolution of gameplay, but also just the incredible ideas behind Assassin's Creed that just naturally seemed to be kind of great film fodder. You
right.
know?
I mean, it's a very sophisticated science fiction idea, really, that boils down to.
Yeah, it really is.
Okay, promise last question. I'm going to ask this. I ask it to everyone that I've interviewed. If you had any advice for emerging filmmakers looking to break out onto the scene, in your experience, what's your best piece of advice?
When I gave up production design, I was a designer and I had a really successful career and I gave it all away to start directing and I started from absolute scratch. And for 3-4 years there was the most depressing time of my life because you're kind of having to prove and validate not only the decision that you've just made to kind of be a director, but also that you can be one. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest advice I have is to love it. Mm. You know, you have to live and breathe it and want to be surrounded by film and want to discuss it and want to be brave about it. To not censor yourself, you know, to try everything. I mean, Shane Meadows, who did This Is England and Room for Romeo Brass and Dead Man's Shoes, I was really inspired when I was sort of growing up about when he was a student. Actually, I don't even think he was a student. I think he just pretended to go to a film school.
Hey, that's what you have nailed our target demographic.
He pretended to go for a film school. I don't think he was even enrolled. He made like 100 films in 1 year. Every single day he like did it. And I think that's the biggest thing is just do it. Keep going and do it and do it and you will learn from it. And just be brave, you know. And it's about conviction. It's about vision. And you can't kind of give up. Those that don't really have it in their heart, they'll give up because it's fucking hard being a director. So that would be my biggest advice is you know, just to kind of eat your love for it and use that as nourishment to keep going.
It's great. Well, thanks so much, man. Justin.
No worries.
Thanks again for listening, everybody. I hope everyone's holidays were warm and happy, and you can check out the No Film School podcast this Monday for an interview with Johannes Nieuwholm, director of the TIFF standout, The Giant. I was John Fusco, and you can follow me on Twitter at @Jim_John_Jim. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure and subscribe to our podcast on whatever the podcast platform you prefer. And if that platform happens to be iTunes, well then hey, give us a review, why don't you? We'll see you on Monday.